Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champ.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
Keith fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Young men can play against. And make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our M.O. with the team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
All right. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, brought to you by Insert Your Brand Name Here. Tom, the Commodores came calling and left with a bloody nose. I know you're excited about this outing, right?
Not at all, man. It reminds me of the intro to the podcast where Coach Saban is yelling at them to get your mind right and let's go. They just didn't have their mind in the game until the start of the second half. And I loved one of his quotes. He said, "Well, I probably got after them about as good as I have done all season. And fortunately, they responded."
Well, yeah, I think fortunately they responded, and get your mind right and let's go is exactly right. I predicted that we would come out flat. We got up for Arkansas, which was a big win. We got up for Florida, which was a big win. We took last Monday off just because at this point in the season, the players needed a break. It was homecoming. And all of these events sort of conspire when you have a group of, 20-year-olds that they're not always going to have the mental fortitude to be up for every single game. And so the fact that against a very game Vanderbilt opponent, who's always, we've seen to always play these kind of first halves.
Right.
We played that kind of first half, but we came out and flipped the switch. How many times have we seen the Tide not be able to flip the switch in the second half and blow out an opponent like this?
No, that's true. And the thing about this game, I heard somebody mention the schedule, and I think it's important for everybody to remember that, last year we were playing 7 games in a row where teams had a bye week before us. Vandy had a bye week before us, and with all due respect to Vandy, this trip game was home against Vandy instead of at South Carolina. And so This is the time last year that I'm glad we had this lull in front of 100,000 fan-friendly instead of on the road in Columbia, South Carolina.
Well, exactly, and that was the proxy last year. This game came, at South Carolina. It was the game that we dropped when we had that letdown, and so this week, it was Vanderbilt. But the fact that we were able to flip the switch, if we could have flipped the switch at halftime in Columbia last year, we would have won the game. And so that just speaks to some mental fortitude that this team has that, last year's team, when we were questioning where the leadership would come from, it didn't come last year. And this year it did come. And I'm pleased. And in fact, I'm very pleased with the outcome of the game. Want to dive into offense or defense first?
Well, I want to do offense, but I first want to just comment on something else you just said there. There were 4 players in the locker room at halftime that stood up and spoke. And I wasn't surprised that it was Dante Hightower and Mark Barron and Trent Richardson. But I was surprised that the 4th person that jumped up and kind of said, "Everybody, let's get going," was DJ Fluker. What do you think about that?
Yeah, Fluker was the surprise name. I read that too. Big Fluke stood up and said some words.
Very interesting.
I think so. But I think that, that speaks to the leadership on the team, and I'm glad to see that. They took control. I'm sure the coaches peeled some paint too.
Jumping to the offense, I was a little frustrated at the beginning of the game because when we were not in sync offensively, it seemed like we were like running the same plays over and over again. And what's interesting about this team, I don't know if it's just because they don't want to put McCarron in difficult situations, or they don't feel like they have the explosiveness for the guys to stretch the field. But we just are running so many screens and so many crossing patterns and so many sideline passes. We're throwing so many plays behind the line of scrimmage. It gets a little frustrating.
I don't know. I think we did throw the ball down the field a little more this week. McCarron had his best, he had his best day of his career. One of only 4 quarterbacks to have 4 passing touchdowns in a game. He completed 77% of his passing. I think this game was unique in that on both sides of the ball, it was almost like we were playing the video game and we said, we're just going to run the Statue of Liberty play every play and we're going to beat you just because, you know, we're going to have fun doing it, and we're going to beat you because we can. I mean, we threw the ball a lot more. We threw the ball 30 times.
We also had the ball a lot. I mean, Vandy only had it 43 plays, and so therefore we had 76. And so if you're going to have 76 plays, we are going to see some more passes. What I mean by this is that if you go look at the plays to start the game, and I'm just quickly looking at like the first 10 plays out of the gate, you know, Marquise Mays running behind the line of scrimmage, screen pass, middle pass, screen pass, crossing pass, screen pass, sideline pass. Okay, those are the first like 7 or 8 pass plays were all dink and dunk. And I found it interesting when you go and look at the distribution of plays, the long pass to DeAndre White, the big pass to Mays that was probably his best pass of the year so far, some would say, all of our down the field stuff came on third and long. I just found that interesting that on third and long, we let him cut loose. But on first and second down, we dinked and dunked.
Well, I'm not going to say necessarily that we were aggressive with the ball down the field, but we did take more strikes down the field. The fact that you point out that we did that on third down, you know, is fine. We put the ball in the air more, probably against one of the better defensive backfield units that we've seen this year. We put the ball in the air more, and we did so, I thought, with great success. In my mind, it rang of, we're going to put some shit on tape.
Now, that's possible. What did you think about, you know, early in the game when we weren't playing that well, Vandy really gave us some opportunities. You know, twice when we were deep in their territory around their 10-yard line, they had an offsides on the defense that gave us, you know, 5 yards closer to the goal line. I think they kind of shot themselves in the foot early on for us.
Yeah, they didn't do themselves any favors, that's for sure. And with their defense and, you know, us starting to move the ball, there's no way that's going to help them win a game.
What did you think? There was a Phil Savage said during the game, and I'm sure you heard this as well. He was talking about A.J. McCarron. He seems to be more comfortable throwing the ball into coverage as opposed to when the guy's wide open, he gets just antsy and he shuffles his feet and he gets a little bit, you know, too juiced up. I found it interesting that all of his touchdown passes, with the exception of that one to Hanks in the fourth quarter when the game was over, both of them to White and to Smelly, he kind of forced it in between 2 and 3 guys when he threw it in there.
Well, it's almost you have to take the brain out of the equation. You know, it's not throwing darts. And so, you know, literally when the guy's wide open, it gives you an opportunity to maybe overthink the situation and clinch a little bit. But when you're rolling out and you're just in the natural flow of the play and you fling it, then that's more of an organic, or that's more of just a natural expression of your athletic ability. And I think that when he's able to, you know, sort of not engage his brain,
right,
when he's not allowed to overthink it and be more natural, then we see what he can do in those situations.
I mean, I was very impressed by his play, but like on that first touchdown to Smelly, you know, it was interesting that it was a third down and 3 yards. It was short yardage. We chose not to run for third and three. And Darius Hanks was wide open on the goal line. It was actually kind of surprising. They only rushed 3 guys on that play. They dropped 8 into that deadly zone that teams should never play in the end zone. And 3 guys went to Smelly, and Hanks was wide open at the goal line, and he threw it to Smelly, which was the much more difficult throw.
Well, you know, it'd be easy to break down in any quarterback's game at any given time, and there's going to be receivers that they miss, and they're going to lock down, and they're going to make, you know, some mistakes. And it's probably impossible to have a technically sound performance on every play, especially because the quarterback position is such a dependent position.
It speaks to your athleticism comment, I guess, is what I mean, is that was a much more difficult throw, and he made it with ease. Even though, sure, you know, I'm watching the tape and rewinding, it's easy on my couch to say this guy was open. But it does speak to, he showed some pretty good athleticism in this ballgame.
Yeah, I think, you know, we see these games and they're snapshots in time and they're on tape. And so we can break them down and we can critique and we can praise and we can do these things. But what we need to do sometimes is take a step back and look at the mosaic that these snapshots create. Man, McCarron is growing up before our eyes. He really, really is.
He is, and he's showing a lot of presence in the pocket. You know, I saw a few times where they would send a blitz and the guy had a clear shot coming to the quarterback. And McCarron, he didn't even flinch. I mean, he kind of took a shot after he got the pass away, but he still completed the ball. And he's just showing a lot more composure in the pocket than I expected him to show, you know, 6 games into the season.
What else on offense stood out to you?
You know, I like the fact that we came back out in the second half. Well, I guess I like, first of all, in the first half, that we went for the touchdown in the two-minute offense. I like that we were able to get points on the board there, but I love that we came out in the second half and said, you know, we're going to run Trent, and we know you're not going to stop us. When I went back and looked at the play distribution, one of the few runs we did in the first half, Trent had 20 yards on a carry. Mm-hmm. Well, if you go back and look at the whole game, he had four carries of over 20 yards in that ball game, and the other three came on that second drive of 94 yards. It kind of reminded me of Mark Ingram in the Wildcat 2 years ago at home against South Carolina, where, Mark, we're putting the game on your shoulders. It kind of felt like we were putting the game on Trent's back and say, carry us and give us some momentum here.
But we did that in, you know, very isolated instances. You know, Trent had 19 carries on the game, which is a low number for him. And the fact that, you know, I even wrote in my note that Trent had a decent day, you know, 107 yards and one touchdown, that speaks more to his greatness and our expectation of him than it does him really having a bad performance, because he really did have a good day.
He did have a good day, and I will tell you that I think 20 carries is good. You know, I don't want to see many games with 30 carries. I mean, I like the fact that right now, you know, he's only had about 100 carries for the year. I like that they're saving him a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. And I wonder if, as we were watching the game and just kind of, you know, watching it unfold, I wondered if it wasn't sort of a tender spot for us, because we did want to manage the amount of carries that we give Trent, you know, in a game against Vanderbilt. At the same time, the backup running back, Eddie Lacy, is out, and then you're effectively going to your third and fourth team running backs with Jawson Fowler and Blake Sims. And so there's almost a tender spot there that says, you know, that's a game probably where Eddie Lacy probably would have had 18 carries in the game, but he's not there.
Right. No, and I think Jawson Fowler, we should probably spend a couple minutes talking about this. I thought he carried the load pretty well coming in so early, which he hasn't done in his career, having to come in the third series. I thought he did pretty well. I even noticed he was picking up blitzes on the pass protection. You know, he doesn't have the full well-rounded game, but I think Saban has the confidence in him that you will do the little things that I expect you to do as a running back besides just carry the football.
Yeah, I think he had an opportunity, you know, almost to audition for more carries over the balance of the season, and I think he performed well. You know, I like to watch him run just because he's a big bruiser, and, you know, the opportunity maybe to fling the ball out to him in flats is something that I certainly look forward to. But in terms of him just being technically sound, running hard between the tackles, picking up the blitzes, all of those types of things, absolutely, he's earned a lot more carries this season.
What else jumps out at you on offense?
I want to say what, you know, and it's easy to kind of fold this into the McCarron topic, but I want to talk about the emergence really of the wide receiver core and our ball distribution. You know, we had 8 receivers that caught balls, 6 of those caught multiple passes, and, you know, Mays Hanks and DeAndre White, hey, where have you been? You know, they all kind of really were the cream of the crop. But the fact that we had eight people catch balls was nice.
Well, I started to say, I think you hit the nail on the head. The fact that we could see that 6 receivers caught balls, but those 6 receivers caught at least 3 balls each, is something we haven't seen all year.
Yeah. And, you know, and part of that's, we threw the ball a lot more, but, you know, that's kind of part and parcel. We threw the ball a lot more, but we had a lot more people available to catch the ball. So I was certainly impressed with the distribution of the ball. I got one more thing on offense, but anything else catch your eye?
Yeah, we've got to spend a little more time talking about Daron Carter. I mean, I think that everybody in that game who knows the players and knows the situation, we're not really sure what happened in the Penn State game for him not to come in until exactly the start of the second quarter.
Whoa, you're talking about DeAndre White, right?
Sorry, I am talking about DeAndre White, excuse me. But the fact that he, I guess still in the back of my mind, I'm wishing we had Daron Carter out there. But DeAndre White, I was happy for him. And for him to make a splash in the first week and even do some punt return and even be on kickoff return, and then to turn around and just be behind Kenny Bell in the rotation, we saw very little Kenny Bell. He didn't catch a pass. We saw very little Kenny Bell in this game. DeAndre White came in early and often, and that catch in the back of the end zone that I thought was out of bounds until they showed the replay, he didn't go up quite as high as Julio, but that was a huge catch. I mean, that could bring something to our offense that we haven't had. And I'm just wondering what happened from week one to week six. I'd love to be a fly on the wall on what happened over the past 5 weeks on the practice field.
Well, at this point, all we can do is speculate, and a good bit of that, you know, sort of timing when he's come in and out of games. And, you know, it's been pretty clear to me that he's been in the coach's doghouse for, you know, something or another. But he has come out, and we've pointed out his performances on special teams, you know, trying to earn his way back into the rotation. And I think he solidified that Saturday night. I'm only assuming that, you know, he's done what he needs to do and that we're going to see more of that. But I just think in terms of, you know, defensive coordinators that now have to look at, you know, this number two cat, you know, where has he been? And now he comes out of nowhere and catches two touchdowns. That's just another weapon that we have on offense that I think is going to help open it up for us.
And his game seems to really be making that explosive play. And so if he can stretch the field like that 39-yard touchdown, I mean, you know I love that, because how many times did I say last year when we're outside the red zone, take a shot? That was a 3rd and 7, and we took a shot from 39 yards away. I mean, I love that. And so if we can do some more of that, and we can allow Darius Hanks and Marquise Mays to do those crossing patterns that they turn into 12-yard gains, man, this is going to be a very difficult offense to stop.
That's a whole other dimension that, you know, we've been looking for a while, and if we can add that to the mix, then that's going to be pretty impressive. Hey, I want to spend a minute on the offensive line play. I still think we're trending the right direction. I'm still pleased, you know, mostly pleased, I guess, with the development. We still need to see this trend. But one thing that really caught my eye, you know, as it happened, was that Fluker sat down at one point. And on the radio, they said, oh, you know, he just lost a shoe on the play. He'll be right back in.
The start of the third quarter, yeah.
Right, except for he did not come right back in. Cyrus
stayed in that whole series.
On that right tackle spot.
Yeah.
That whole series, which happened to be a long, you know, 90-plus yard drive that Coach Saban, you know, came out and called dominant in his press conference. And, you know, that was Fluker on the sideline as Cyrus was executing in his position. What do you think about that?
It was interesting that he stayed in for that whole series. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think he played much more until the very end when they brought in the second string, you know, at the beginning of the fourth quarter. So he came for that one drive, and then he kind of went back to the bench until mop-up duty. And so I'm not really sure how to gauge that, because you're bringing Cyrus in when you want to jumpstart the team. The team has punted the ball right out of the gate to start the second half, which I'm sure he's not happy about. He's happy to be up 14-0. They've pinned you deep, and you bring in your true freshman to run with the first string and try to score a touchdown from 94 yards away. I'll be honest with you, I don't know what the hell he was thinking. I guess it's because he knew he was about to give the ball to Trent 10 times, and he said, I mean, maybe he just knows Cyrus is better at run blocking than pass blocking right now.
Yeah, I don't know, and I don't know what to read into it, and I guess more than anything, I'd want to not err in trying to read too much into it, but it was certainly something to take note of, and it is certainly something to keep an eye on in these next couple of weeks.
Now, that's true. What jumped out on defense for you?
You know what really just caught my eye on defense is the prevalence of the 3-4 defense, and, you know, everyone says, well, we run a 3-4 anyways. Well, you know, not really. A nickel, you know, a 3-3 nickel is really what we run a lot of, or
a 3-2-5, yeah.
Yeah, or just really a lot of nickel and dime. And you and I have talked about the nickel really being our base defense for, you know, 2 years now. But we came out and we played more 3-4, just pure 3-4 with four DBs. We played more of that Saturday night than I think that I've seen in the last year, all games totaled. And to me, that was just interesting. I noticed that there were moments where that created discomfort in our defensive backfield as they were trying to position themselves and wave people over. And when there was motion, someone would go and kind of turn to make sure that, you know, hey, is my backside still covered here? Because, you know, in their mind, we're a man down back here.
No, that's true. Even Josh Chapman was quoted after the game. They asked him where the defensive unit is 6 games into the season. And he said, we still have a lot of work to do. We have a lack of communication out on the field. It's something we've got to get clicking. We are bonding well, but we still have a lot of work to do. And so, you know, the confusion that we saw in this game is probably more than you and I have seen from the sidelines all season. But it probably, like you said, had more to do with, you know, we had the Darrell Harrises and the Nico Johnsons who played a lot more snaps than they normally do. And we also didn't have, you know, the leadership of Daquan Menzie out there as much as we're used to.
Yeah, and, you know, I want to tie some of this back to, you know, Mosley not being there as well. You know, too, with him being out trying to force fit another linebacker into his position in the nickel, I wonder if we didn't say, look, we're just going to play more of our base personnel, not try to get someone in a position that they're not comfortable with, but play the base personnel, this base 3-4 with four, and mold it to cover, you know, the offense and what the offense brings at us. And it seemed like we were persistent in playing that 3-4. And there again, it was almost, we think we're good enough that we can beat you by playing a, you know, non-standard approach to defense almost.
Well, and the formation that Vandy came with, though, was a lot of two tight ends and three tight ends as well. I mean, very rarely did they bring four and five wides on a formation. And so that helped, too. But, you know, and also they only had 43 plays. And so, you know, as I was going back and thinking about it, because they were talking about the rest that the players got in the fourth quarter, I was like, well, gosh, if they only had 43 plays and 10 or 12 of those came in the fourth quarter when it was really our backups were in the game, hell, our starters only played about 30 defensive snaps in the ball game.
Right. What rest do you need?
I mean, so, yes, we saw more base 3-4, but you probably only saw about 30 plays from the starters. Hey, what did you think about the quarterback for Vandy? You know, a lot has been said about, you know, we're knocking quarterbacks out of ball games and this kind of stuff, but I thought it was a key moment in the game. You know, we always talk about there's a few plays that make a ball game. Well, Vandy had just done a lot of misdirection. They had just got the tight end out in the flats for a 30-yard completion to the 28-yard line of Alabama. And here they are at a third and a foot. They've got a third and a foot at the 28, and they start out in three wides, and then they split out, and the quarterback does a delay draw. And, man, he just missed the hole. Between the tight end and the left tackle, he could have gained yards, and they would have had first and goal in our red zone. Instead, he runs right into Josh Chapman and Jesse Williams. And that must have been the play he got hurt on. And the coach said he could have come back in the game. Well, hell, if he could have come back in the game, why don't you bring him back in? It's only the first quarter.
Well, could he have come back into the game if it were a competitive game in sort of an emergency situation? That's different than, oh, yeah, he can come back into a game that we know that we're going to lose and he's going to take a lot of shots because he's not, you know, being mobile.
I just think it's a bad
could have and should have there are completely two different things.
I think it sends a bad message to your team. I mean, the game is 7-0 at that point. You've just missed a field goal. And if your quarterback can come back in, you don't bring in the backup quarterback who's a JUCO transfer at the beginning of the second quarter. It's like you're throwing in the towel and it scores 7-0. I thought that was a key play because he ran right into Josh Chapman, and Josh Chapman's not the fastest guy. I mean, he picked the worst possible hole, third and a foot. All he had to do was fall forward, and he would have got a first down. And they go on to miss that field goal, and then they miss another field goal in the first half. And I'm thinking, man, this is the Vandy jinx because here they are outplaying us and we're still up 14-0 at half. And they really did some good things in the first half against us.
Well, you know, we went up 14-0 at half with that catch right at the end of the half. It's not unreasonable to think that it could have been a 7-6 ball game at half. And then maybe, I don't know,
they could have possibly
the second half has a different personality.
I guess it alludes to what we've talked about. How many years have you and I been watching football where, you know, Alabama and Vandy used to play each other every single year and the final score would be 17-7? And so, you know, they've played a lot of close ball games. It was just a few plays just kind of fell the wrong way there that I thought was interesting. What else jumped out for you on defense?
Well, I think the two picks in the fourth quarter, I think were nice when their offense is maybe pressing, the backup quarterback's pressing a little bit. You know, Nico and Milliner, you know, both starters were able to pick the ball off. I think that was certainly impressive. And then, you know, we talked about how they missed a couple of kicks, and so that contributed. But the fact that we pitched a shutout, you know, you're going to have some skill and some good luck in a ball game where you have a shutout. And so the fact that we had a shutout, I think that's impressive.
Now, anytime you can get a shutout against an SEC team, that is definitely something. Do you want to talk about special teams or do you want to go to the game balls?
You know, I think Mays is always a threat. Okay, so that's understood. Vanderbilt's punter, even including his 20-yard stinker.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Had a great night.
Yes, two punts over 50 yards. I'm sure our punter is sitting there watching saying, what the hell, how do I do that?
Exactly. And so, you know, short kicks on our kickoffs, and we missed a PAT.
Hey, did you notice, just real quick, because we don't want the listeners to have to listen to too much of this because we could just play back from last week. What did you think about the fact that one of the kickoffs that Jeremy Shelley took one of the attempts as opposed to Cade Foster taking all of them? It's almost like Coach Saban put Jeremy out there to say, well, let me see if you can kick it longer than 60 yards.
It's another version of open tryouts.
I just thought it was interesting. Cade takes five kickoffs and Jeremy Shelley takes the last one. It's almost like he put him in on the last one just to say, well, let me just see if you can do any better.
All right. How are you screwing up game balls today?
You know, you're probably not going to call this a mini game ball, but A.J. McCarron, and I was going to give it, I was back and forth between A.J. McCarron and DeAndre White. I even wanted to throw in some Brad Smelly and Michael Williams because they kind of blocked their ass off. But I think we have to give this to A.J. McCarron from my perspective. I mean, when I was looking back at the stats and we talked about his high completion percentage and his ball distribution, he had 10 third and long pass plays. He converted 7 of those for first downs. He was 7 of 10 on third and long getting a first down with his arm. That's pretty damn impressive from a veteran quarterback, much less a quarterback that is starting his 6th ball game. And so just how he's managing things and how he is not getting himself in a bad situation and how he's showing composure in the pocket. And, you know, he's checking at the line of scrimmage and audibling to different plays. You know, I'm just very impressed about, you know, I can't wait to see him next year. I think right now, if you look at this team and what this team got from the quarterback play, you know, when Greg McElroy was there in 09, they're getting that from this first-year starter and a little bit more than even Greg brought to the table.
You know, the fact that you give your game ball, and it's, you're right, it's not a mini game ball. The fact that you give your game ball to A.J. McCarron, that just makes me so proud, Grasshopper, that you're listening to what I'm saying in these podcasts.
Is that who you were going to give it to as well?
No, I just, 2 weeks in a row, I've said McCarron's growing up before our eyes, and so you give him the
That has nothing to do with that. What, who's your game ball to, man? Time's of the essence here. Who's your game ball to?
I just think that's awesome. That's all. I'm giving my, and I also laid how you kind of napalmed all the players on offense to, you know,
yes,
to kind of, so you could stake your claim to all of them. So that was good. Authentically, I'm giving my mini game ball to Brad Smelly. He had 3 catches on the night, certainly blocked well. He played with that sort of senior tenacity that I've talked about before and like to give credit for.
He's blocking a hell of a lot better than he did last year, isn't he?
Well, he certainly has improved himself. And you know, he was a target a couple times that he didn't catch the ball, but he did have 3 catches. One was a first down, and I think this is probably a surprise stat that I read, but he caught his first career touchdown Saturday night.
Yeah, that was.
And in my mind, that kind of cemented the mini game ball.
Okay. Who are you giving it to on defense?
Well, the game ball on defense, it kind of reminds me of when I played Little League. And so the very first game of the Little League season, I was in the outfield and, you know, a ball kind of trickled through and I threw a runner out at second base. And that was really the only play that I made all season. And so at the very end of the season, you know, coach is giving game balls and, you know, you want to give a game ball to all the players. And at the end of the season, he gives me the game ball and said, you know what, I probably should have given it to you the first game of the year. Well, that's kind of how I'm treating my defensive game ball today. If Jarrell Harris is ever getting a game ball for me, then it's probably going to be, you know, a week like this week. He saw more snaps probably, you know, Saturday than I maybe thought that he was going to get the whole season. You know, he had a couple of tackles. He had a tackle for loss. He had a quarterback hurry that led to Nico's interception. And so he just seemed to be the man in the spot a couple of times. And I don't know that he's done that before or will do it again. So if he's ever getting a game ball for me, this one's got to be it.
So let me get this straight. A guy that we have made fun of on numerous podcasts, even whiffing in the backfield at Arkansas and Dante having to clean up his mess, you're giving him the game ball.
Yeah, I'm referencing, you know, a real life, you know, personal experience, interpersonal experience here, and I'm drawing the parallel. He's not getting a mini game ball for any other game, but if he's going to get one, then this is sort of a slice of opportunity that exists for him to earn this prestigious award, and so I'm giving it to him.
That's very touching indeed. My game ball, I wanted to give it to the whole defense because no one really filled up the stat sheet. I know it's not all about stats, but, you know, no one really jumped out at me as having a wow game, kind of like Courtney Upshaw did against Florida. But once again, several different players filled up the stat sheet in tackles for loss. We had 8 players contribute tackles for loss. And I guess even looking at that stat, the key thing for me is Josh Chapman and Jesse Williams, you know, they each shared a 1 tackle for loss on that key play we talked about earlier where they stopped the quarterback on 3rd and a foot. And so you've got defensive linemen making plays behind the line of scrimmage, and it's not Courtney Upshaw. So that's pretty impressive. But the other guy that I was torn between was Mark Barron. Obviously, he's a high-profile guy on the defense, but the leadership that he's showing, I was surprised to see he had already had 30 tackles on the season. I mean, we're 6 games in, and he's already got 30 tackles, and he's probably, you know, he hadn't even played all of every game because of how much we've been up. And just the leadership that he's showing on the field, he's flying around the ball, making plays. He would have to share some of the game ball. But you're talking about your little league experience. I've got to talk about mine. You know, when I was growing up playing, you know, park football, you know, at a young age, we had to learn how to form tackle. You know, you had to wrap up around the guy's waist and put your helmet in his gut and drive him to the ground. And there was a key play where Mark Barron had a shot on Rodgers, the backup quarterback, and he flew in and just kind of, it was a big thud, and he fell over backwards over the back of the quarterback. But man, if he would have picked him up and drove him to the ground, we would have seen our 3rd quarterback of the day, and that just would have been way more cool.
So you know that giving the mini game ball is kind of like an honor?
Yes.
And so would you just slapping him around with the mini game ball there?
No, I do think his leadership and what he is bringing to the defense 99% of the time is pretty awesome, and it's a big-ass game ball deserving. When you get a chance to drive the quarterback, you need to drive him, man. You need to make him remember that you were there.
I just want to say good work, sir, for coming up with a brand new and probably your most creative way of screwing up one of our game balls.
I appreciate that, man. Coming from you, that's a compliment.
Good work, sir. Hey, I have a brand new feature, probably just a one-time thing. But what was your favorite part of the entire ball game?
My favorite part of the entire ball game had to be listening to our good football buddy, Eric, moaning and bitching when Sweet Caroline rolled out and started playing over the PA system.
That's ironic because I was going to say that my favorite part of the ball game was when we exercised our brand new tradition and played Sweet Caroline.
Are you surprised we played it again, or has it become an every game thing now?
Oh, no, at this point, we'll be bitching about this for the next 20 years.
Because they did show that people already starting to hugging each other and swaying back and forth. And so I guess they brought that back from our away game as well.
Oh, no, it's awesome because, you know, when we heard that at Penn State, that was the first time I'd ever heard it at a sporting event. I'd heard that the Red Sox do that, but, you know, that's something different. I was listening to, you know, Gino and Ivan Mizell on their podcast, and they were talking about one of the great traditions is at Wisconsin when they do Sweet Caroline. Who the hell's tradition is this, and why does it have to be ours?
That's true. What do you think about this next week opponent? I was listening to the press conference with Saban, and, man, he is a master of not giving the other team bulletin board material. I mean, he is so good in these press conferences of finding something positive to say about the other team, even if they suck.
Well, and that's fine, and that's what he needs to do. And it seems like for every year, you know, the last couple of years anyways, that everyone we've played has been the best team we'll play at something.
He said they certainly played their best game of the year in their last game against Fresno State. It's almost like we have a PR person in media relations who figures out how to insert what's going to be the words to insert in that blank to, you know, it's almost like he goes to the grunt and says, find something, find anything they've done good and put it down on this piece of paper for me.
Well, they won a road game, so there you have it. I do think Ole Miss, they're down this year.
They're spiraling down fast, man. This is going to be ugly.
Yeah, you know, let's be realistic, right? I mean, they have started three different quarterbacks in five games. They're ranked in the 90s in terms of total offense. This is just a legitimate, good old-fashioned blowout. I'm looking at something like 42-6.
Yeah, see, I don't think we'll see 50 just because that's not Saban's style. And I do think in the 40s is kind of the upper end of what he's comfortable kicking somebody's tail by. I mean, because we've seen the past couple of weeks that he has slammed on the brakes when it got in the high 30s.
Yep.
And so I think I'd love to see no field goals, five touchdowns, 35-3. I'd love to see more, but, you know, if he's up by 30 points, he's just going to shut it down. And hopefully we can see Sims and the backups get in there early in the fourth quarter. And hopefully Sims will do better with it this week than he did last week.
Well, yeah, and I think that we will. I think what we're going to find is that Ole Miss backups won't be able to stop our backups.
No, that's true. I agree with that.
All right. Hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for listening. Be sure to drop us an email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com to be added to our mailing list. And follow us on Twitter now, at Bama Football Pod. Until next time, roll tide.
Blow the horn, let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champ.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.